The Place You Call Home by 94 Balls of Snapple, read by Co-Prime. Rating, teen and up. Archive warning, no archive warnings apply. Fandoms, Daredevil Comics and Daredevil TV. Relationship, Matt Murdock / Foggy Nelson. Characters, Matt Murdock, Foggy Nelson, Candace Nelson, Sam Chung, Lester or Benjamin Dex Point Dexter, and Brett Mahoney. Additional tags: alternate universe historical, cowboys and cowgirls, point of view Foggy Nelson, canon typical violence, mutual pining, childhood friends, misunderstandings, action adventure, reunions, and contains both comics and show characters. Summary: Foggy Nelson comes home to the town of Clinton after 6 years away. Not everything is as he left it, especially not Matt. Worse still, there's trouble brewing, and Foggy and his family are right in the crosshairs. For the prompt, a Matt Foggy period romance AU. The sun was high and the sky was cloudless when Foggy Nelson rode back into Clinton. He wanted to believe that was a good omen and not an ill one, but it wasn't as if the circumstances that had called him home after 6 long years away were happy ones. He'd always dreamed of returning with his head held high and his pockets flush with cash, not hurrying back only a little less poor than he'd started, because Candy had sent him a telegraph that Pop had broken his leg. But here he was, for better or worse, he supposed. Best to focus on the positives: visiting his family again, getting a break from the big city grind, seeing Matt. That final thought alone was enough to make the back of Foggy's neck go hot. The two of them had still been growing into the shape of themselves when Foggy had shipped off to Silver Springs. How different would Matt look after over half a decade apart? Well, only one way to find out. With a click of Foggy's tongue, Lightning's pace, which had slowed to a plodding trot, kicked up again, and they finally entered the town. The buildings were a little more worn, but the shape of Clinton was the way Foggy remembered. The sheriff's office and the jail, the bank, the blacksmith, his family's saloon, the general store. "Franklin Nelson, is that you?" He pulled Lightning to a stop in order to locate the owner of the voice coming from the doorway of the general store. "Josie, you haven't aged a day. I've returned to sweep you off your feet." That only made her roll her eyes heavenward. "Lord, strike this impudent boy down," she was surely thinking. Foggy beamed. "Still got soft hands?" she asked him, unimpressed, and didn't wait for an answer. "Then get lost. Your boy does enough work on the ranch for two, so I don't need a layabout like you hanging around." Josie, you wound me." Foggy pressed a hand to his heart, now fluttering at the description of Matt as "your boy." A pleased, possessive feeling curled up in his belly like a sunning snake. Tilting her head, Josie studied him. "Guessing you came back to take over for Ed?" she asked. "Yeah," said Foggy. "That's about the long and short of it." She gave him a nod like a dismissal and marched back into the general store. Right afterwards, the canter of hoofbeats caught Foggy's ears. They were coming from down the road, towards Josie's ranch on the other side of town. Foggy set Lightning on a slow walk in that direction, since it was where he was headed anyway, home to check on Pop. He could come back to the saloon later to see if Candy was in. On the way, Foggy started up a whistling tune, something he and Matt had been fond of as kids. But after passing only a couple buildings, the ringing hoofbeats headed towards him stopped for nearly 2 minutes. Long enough that Foggy figured whoever it was had reached their destination and dismounted. Except then they resumed. Well, that's weird. But when Stardust, Matt's coal-black mare, trotted into view, with Matt on her back, of course, Foggy forgot everything that wasn't the man riding past him. Matt was a vision, and the floodgates of Foggy's heart slammed wide open, like they'd just been waiting for a glimpse of him to fill Foggy's bloodstream with a torrent of longing. His yearning the past 6 years was a drop in the bucket compared to this moment when Matt was finally back in reach. He was tanned from the sun, with freckles spattered across his skin as though God had artfully flicked him with paint to add a little texture. A worn, familiar, wide-brim hat sat on his head, and messy strands of red hair emerged from under it. Matt's eyes were as blue as Foggy remembered, and just below the right one there was a smear of clay on his cheekbone. His nose had gone a little crooked, like he'd been in a saloon brawl since Foggy was gone, but his mouth looked the same, soft and rose pink. His sleeves were rolled up to the elbow, showing off the musculature of his arms when he swung off Stardust's back. There was a red bandana tied around his neck, and something underneath it that gleamed when the fabric fluttered up during Matt's leap to the ground, but was covered up again too quick for Foggy to make it out. With an easy grace, Matt looped Stardust's reins around a post outside the saloon and started towards the general store that Josie had just re-entered. Hurriedly, Foggy slid off Lightning's back. "Matt!" Matt jerked to a stop. There he stood as Foggy ran up, and only after Foggy reached him did Matt turn to face him. His expression was blank, strangely unreadable. It made Foggy's stomach swoop with nerves. "Foggy?" "Yeah," Foggy replied. It's me." Matt nodded slowly. "It's been a while. Coming back for good?" Foggy's heart sank. To an outsider, those words would be a polite question. But to Foggy from Matt? "Did you accomplish what you said you would?" he was asking. "Did you make your fortune so we could live comfortably together like you promised?" And the truth was, Foggy hadn't. He'd been trying, making slow gains, but every time he fell ill, every time Lightning threw a shoe, every time the prices at the store went up and his wages stayed the same, it set him back. Matt won't want to hear any of that, though. They felt like cheap excuses just sitting on Foggy's tongue. They'd sound cheaper in the open air. "Just until Papa's back on his feet, probably," he admitted instead. "Ah. But how are you doing?" He was interrupted by Matt turning away. "It was nice to speak to you again. If you'll excuse me, though, I've got a few things to stock up on." And with that, Matt strode away, easy as you please, as if that was all they were to each other, passing acquaintances fit for a simple, cordial hello and goodbye. "Did you really forget about me?" Foggy wanted to ask as Matt disappeared into the general store. "Not a day went by that I didn't think of you." It was difficult not to feel hard done by. Maybe stolen kisses behind the barn and a foolish but honestly given promise didn't mean much to Matt now, but they'd meant and still meant everything to Foggy. Mood soured, he trudged onwards, leading Lightning by the reins instead of getting back in the saddle. Walking instead of riding, it took him an extra 5 minutes, which he spent brooding. Had Matt moved on? Was he simply angry at Foggy for taking so long? Or perhaps he'd never considered things between them so serious in the first place? That was the thought in Foggy's head when he finally spotted his childhood home. But at the sight of it, the sting of rejection faded. Despite a bit of weathering, it was just as he remembered it. Sturdy front porch with a couple rocking chairs perched on it, a wreath of dried flowers hung on the door, a pie cooling on the windowsill. For a moment or two, he just stood with his arms crossed over his chest and studied it with a fond gaze. Then he looped Lightning's reins over the porch railing and jogged up the steps. "Ma, you home?" There was an almighty crash from the direction of the kitchen. "Frankie!" It came out over lunch with his parents. Candy, it seemed, had taken the initiative to telegraph Foggy without Ma or Pop knowing. The reason being, after Pop's leg had been broken, he'd asked James from down at the records office to take over. After all, as unladylike as she could be, Pop wasn't going to let his only daughter man the saloon on her own. And on the other side of things, Candy wasn't going to stand for Pop's pick of replacement. Foggy supposed he couldn't blame her. James and Candy had never got on. They were just very different people, and their personalities clashed. Foggy had never wanted to take over the saloon, but for the sake of peace in his family, he had little choice. So there he found himself that afternoon, behind the bar and relearning the ropes under his sister's overly critical eye. James had been summarily chased away, to her great satisfaction. Same old saloon, same old patrons, all a little older than Foggy had seen them last, except there was one face he didn't recognize. "Who's that?" Foggy asked quietly, tipping his head towards the man at the back corner table. "Oh, that's just Lester," Candy said. "Don't you worry about him none, he's fine. So long as you don't play darts with him, anyway." Foggy eyed the stranger, slim and bald and with a gun at each hip. He was leaning back so far in his chair that he had it balanced on two legs. "Why not darts?" "He never misses," Candy explained with a twinkle in her eye, wiping out a glass. "The boys call him Bullseye." "Bullseye?" Lester cottoned on to Foggy's staring before he could look away. An odd grin stole over the man's face that sent a shiver down Foggy's spine. There wasn't much time to worry about Lester, though, no matter how uneasy he made Foggy feel. Between balancing the saloon's books, serving drinks, organizing the entertainment, and supervising the gambling, Foggy was about run off his feet, even with Candace's help. What little free time he did have was spent doggedly pursuing Matt. At first, Foggy thought that, well, maybe Matt really had been busy, or he'd clammed up because Foggy's return was so unexpected and he didn't know what to say. That the timing had been bad, basically. But bad timing was a fixable problem. On his second full day in town, Foggy packed up a lunch for two and hustled down to the ranch to share it with Matt. However, "Already ate," Matt said simply when Foggy arrived. There were no dishes in his sink or the little table in his bunkhouse room. And in fact, although he tried to hide it, Foggy could see the telltale twitch of Matt's nose that meant he'd smelled something he desperately wanted to eat. "You sure?" Foggy pressed, in the vain hope that the first refusal was just politeness on Matt's part. "Yeah," came Matt's reply. "I'm not hungry." Foggy felt his own appetite dry up in disappointment. He searched Matt's handsome face for some kind of sign to tell him what to do, but found nothing. A mask of implacable calm, eyes as blue as cornflowers, lips Foggy hadn't kissed in 6 years. "Maybe tomorrow, then," he offered weakly. "I don't think that would work out," Matt said, and didn't elaborate. So Foggy left, and he ate alone, shoveling down bites past his unhappy nausea, because there was no point in wasting food. Even after that brush-off, though, Foggy persisted. He sought out Matt as often as he could, hungry for any response that wasn't a rebuff. But flowers were rejected, greetings were ignored or returned blandly, and Matt never sought Foggy out of his own volition. It hurt. It also made Foggy angry. Matt was being petty and rude and childish. If there was a problem, he could come out and say it. It came to a head on day 5 of Foggy's return. Matt passed him by without even an indication of knowing he was there, but Foggy knew he did. Matt always knew when Foggy was around, even when he hadn't said a word. He'd never explained the nature of this uncanny ability, but he'd had it since the accident that blinded him, and it had never failed. So that was the last straw. "Will you just talk to me?" Foggy demanded, sharp and sudden. That got Matt to stop. Finally. He didn't turn back in Foggy's direction, but he stayed. That had to mean something. "Sure," Matt said. "Sure, Foggy, I'll talk to you. If you beat me in a shooting contest." The smile on Matt's face as he turned was anything but friendly. And yet, of anything he could have said, a shooting contest? It was something they'd done as teenagers, Matt equally using it as a way to show off his uncanny awareness and as a way to flirt by genteelly letting Foggy win. The memory stirred hope in Foggy's chest, and he agreed to the contest without hesitation. They set things up the way they always had before, back at a deserted corner of the ranch, with a dented metal feed bucket hooked over a fence post about 25 yards away. No animals in range, no one and nothing to disturb with their gunfire. This was it, wasn't it? Matt's way of saying he really did want to talk? His own method of capitulation? Foggy went first. He missed his first two shots, but hit the next three. It wasn't a perfect showing, but then Foggy had never been an ace marksman. And that wasn't the point anyway, not if Matt was going to lose on purpose. Foggy stepped aside and let Matt take his place. Bang. One hit. Bang. Another. Foggy's breath caught at the moment of truth. He'd got his hits up front, but now Matt would shoot wide on purpose. He had to, right? Bang, bang, bang. Three perfect hits, one right after another without hesitation. Foggy felt as though he'd been drenched in an icy bucket of water. Matt made a show of cupping his ear, as if to better hear the sound of his bullets pinging off the metal bucket. A devil's grin tilted his mouth. Seems to me I'm two eyes down and still a better shot than you. Foggy couldn't help the bittersweet smile tugging at the corner of his lips. Even if this result hurt, even if... It was still nice to get to watch Matt show off again, after so long. You're a real funny guy, Mr. Murdoch. You know that? Foggy said, trying to keep his voice even so he didn't betray how shaken he truly felt. One of my better qualities. Foggy was just about to reply when he caught movement out of the corner of his eye. A small figure rounding the corner of the barn. He didn't look familiar from a distance. Pale skin and a mop of short black hair. A red bandana like Matt's. Boss, hey boss, called the kid, skidding to a stop next to them. Josie wanted to talk to you. Foggy blinked. A new hire? He asked. This is Sam Chung, said Matt, placing a hand on the boy's shoulder. I've been showing him the ropes this past year. The expression on Matt's face was so fond, so much warmer than anything Foggy'd seen since his return to Clinton, that Foggy had a difficult time tearing his eyes away. But eventually he managed it and got his first good look at Sam. He was probably Chinese, no older than 15, with a handsome face and confident posture. Like Matt, his clothes bore the dust of honest ranch work. Nice to meet you, Sam. I'm Foggy, Foggy said, and offered a hand up to shake. Sam gave him a hard stare until he retracted it. Thanks for coming to get me, Matt told Sam, before tipping his face back towards Foggy. See you around, Foggy. Right, yeah, see you around. With his arms still curved around Sam's shoulder, Matt walked away. Foggy watched the two of them leave, his feet and his heart leaden. Once they were out of sight, around the side of the barn, he headed for home. Along the way, Foggy slowly found his equilibrium. With each step, his heart eased a little, and the tightness between his ribs began to dissipate. It ached, yes, but Matt seemed happy. He was good at his work, well-respected. He had a protege. He built his own life on his own terms. And it was comforting to know Matt was content, even if it was in a life where Foggy had no place. All Foggy had ever really wanted for Matt was for him to be happy. Of course, that left Foggy's plans for the future a bit tangled. Should he stay once Pop was back on his feet? Go back to Silver Springs? Go somewhere entirely new, far away where he didn't have to watch Matt be happy without him? Ah, there came the leaden feeling again. But his melancholy was interrupted by the sound of raised voices. Pop and Candy added again. Foggy kicked off his boots and hung his hat by the door before going to see what they had their dander up about, especially since it smelled like dinner was almost ready for eating, which was Candy's favorite time of day. What's all this? He asked, trying to bring a little lightness back to the tone. Ma, at least, seemed to appreciate the attempt, harried and annoyed and covered up to her elbows in flour, but Candy wasn't having it. Oh, nothing. Just Pop being willfully obtuse. Owsley and his crew aren't just some bandits. They're working for that Wilson Fisk, trying to shut down the saloon so the whole town collapses and he can build his stupid railroad. We have no proof of that, Pop argued sharply. Proof? Snapped Candy. We don't need proof. It's obvious to anybody with eyes. The ensuing argument, during which Foggy was entirely forgotten, was enlightening. Not only was Pop's broken leg not an accident, it was the result of Leland Owlsley's crew, who'd been hiding out in Dry Gorge to the south for a couple years now, taking exception to him refusing to sell the saloon to Fisk, or so went Candy's logic. Owlsley's men had certainly done the deed, but Pop was less convinced on the why. Fisk. Foggy recognized the name. He'd heard it everywhere out in Silver Springs. Fisk had made it big with a silver mine a decade ago, and been spreading his influence across the territory since then. He'd even acquired a railway company a couple years back, and was expanding its tracks as rapidly as his reputation. What he'd want with a speck of nothing like Clinton, Foggy wasn't sure. By the time he had come back from his musing, the fight seemed to have settled a bit. "You're just lucky the Red Devil showed up when he did," Candy muttered at last. "You know they wouldn't have stopped at your leg, Pop." Now that was a name Foggy didn't know. "Red Devil?" he asked. But before Candy could elaborate, Ma brandished a wooden spoon. "None of that talk," she insisted. "That man is banned from dinner table discussion for a reason." And so Candy's mouth snapped shut. Pop returned to straightening his silverware. The subject was dropped. Dinner was delicious, although anything home-cooked would be compared to what Foggy had been able to afford in Silver Springs. But even with the distraction of food, Foggy's mind was still whirling with thoughts of the mysterious Red Devil and who he could get answers about him from. Well, he hadn't had a chance to catch up with Brett since he'd gotten back. No time like the present, right? Brett was still at the sheriff's office, even so late in the evening. But one look at Foggy had him rolling tobacco for a cigarette, then dragging them both up to the building's second-floor balcony. "What is it this time?" he asked Foggy while lighting up. "Found out how Pop's leg got broken," said Foggy. Brett sucked in a breath through his teeth, and then another after he remembered to put his cigarette to his lips. "Jesus H. Christ, Candace didn't tell you?" "Nope. But I also found something else today. That somebody protected Pop from the bandits." "Who is this Red Devil anyway, Brett?" Foggy asked. "Have you seen him?" Brett leaned against the railing, watching the town below instead of answering. After a couple seconds of silence, he spoke. "First time he showed up was a couple years after you left. I missed it, out handling a dispute between a couple of those homesteaders just outside of town. Owlsley's entire crew of bandits came to rob the bank. We didn't even know who they were back then. My deputies were outgunned, and then, there he was, or so they tell me, like a bolt from the blue. No one saw him ride into town, he was just there." Brett paused then, lost in thought. He took a drag of his cigarette, then shook his head. "He drove them out, single-handed. Just some guy with a pistol and a horsewhip." There was a red bandana hanging over his eyes, and he smiled like the devil. "God, I don't know. The way Thomas described it to me, I thought he'd hallucinated the whole thing. Heat stroke, blood loss, something." Brett laughed, bleakly. "Then a month later, the Red Devil tackled me out of the way of a bullet. No horsewhip this time, but he still had a gun. And his fists." Foggy blanched. "His fists?" "Regular barroom brawler, this devil," Brett joked, taking another drag. "He didn't show up till Owlsley did, in essence, and Owlsley didn't show up until..." Foggy had a feeling he wouldn't like what came next. "Until?" he prodded anyway. "Until Fisk tried to buy up the town." "Then all that stuff Candy was saying about Fisk and the bandits?" Brett blew out a melancholy mouthful of smoke. "Hell if I know," he admitted. "What I do know is this. Owlsley is a con man. A smart guy. He robbed 3 banks in his day without getting in 10 leagues of being caught. And he likes to live in luxury. All this bandit shit doesn't make sense for him. Unless there's something else going on. Maybe Candace is right. Maybe Fisk's funding them to get the town to fold. I know for a fact they've got someone on the inside, because they always seem to know when the deputies and I are already stretched thin. But all the mayor cares about is how hard Fisk and Silver Springs are pushing him to get the devil. Foggy blinked. Wait, what? He shook his head. That doesn't make any sense. Why would Silver Springs care? And why even worry about the Red Devil if he's protecting the town from bandits? According to them, Brett answered, in a way that made Foggy think he probably meant according to Fisk. The Devil blew up one of Fisk's rail crossings. Did he? Not a clue, admitted Brett, as he twisted his cigarette between his fingers. It doesn't matter anyhow. It was enough to get the guy I wanted poster. Sighing, Foggy moved up next to Brett at the balcony railing and leaned against the banister with him. Never thought things would be so complicated when I got back, he said. Well, that's what happens when you leave for years at a time, Brett pointed out. Things change. They surely do. After a week, Foggy felt like he'd finally settled back in at the saloon. He was used to the flow of the work, the comings and goings of the townsfolk. And then, of course, Josie dropped at the bar in the late afternoon and tripped him up completely. Her order was simple enough, whiskey, but her conversation was a little tougher. Sammy tells me you're not staying, she started with, and her glare was sharp and disappointed. Foggy shrugged uncomfortably. Probably not. He hadn't decided yet. It would be a while until Pop healed after all, but why stay? Josie tossed back a mouthful of her whiskey. So, you're just leaving Matt behind again? Leaving Matt behind. As if that was truly possible, no matter how far Foggy traveled. As if Matt would even care. As if it wasn't Foggy who was carrying a torch, who'd been left behind. He seems happy with the way things are, said Foggy, and tried to keep the bitterness from his voice. He doesn't need me around. Are you an idiot? Josie said, as if there was no doubt in her mind. I've sent that boy on cattle drives all over by now. He could pack up and ride to anywhere and hire on for half-decent pay. But he doesn't. And it ain't because my personality is so charming. Foggy sighed, leaning his arms against the countertop. That doesn't mean... He was waiting for you, kid, she insisted. He's still waiting for you, if you just go to him. I already tried, Foggy said, trying to keep his voice steady even as his chest went tight with irritation. He doesn't want to talk to me. Josie drained her glass and then motioned for a refill. Foggy poured her more whiskey. Try harder, she said. I'm already sick of his moping that you gave up so easy, and it's only been 2 days. Foggy's heart vibrated behind his ribs like a struck bell. That, it seemed too good to be true, but Josie was never one to mince words. If she said Matt was moping, he was moping. And that meant Foggy still had a chance. Candy, Foggy called over his shoulder, already hurrying out from behind the bar. Watch the place. I'll be right back. He headed straight for the ranch without stopping, didn't let anything slow him down or get in his way. But when he arrived, he didn't see Matt in the field with the herd, or Sam. What he saw was 5 unfamiliar men, faces covered with brown bandanas, smashing the fences. Hey, Foggy shouted, rushing up to them before he'd thought better of it. Get away from there! Of course, it was only after he'd clocked one directly in the face that he realized they were probably armed with more than just their sledgehammers. Not that a sledgehammer to the leg wouldn't be a deliberating blow. That was how Owlsley's crew had... Owlsley's crew. Foggy only had half a second to notice the subtle owl design stitched into their bandanas before a gun was cocked and its barrel pressed to his chest. Howdy there, Nelson. The stranger's eyes crinkled like he was smiling under his bandana. Foggy had a feeling it wasn't a very nice smile. The rest of the men, sans the ones still getting back to his feet from Foggy's punch, circled him, cutting off any escape. Okay, Foggy said. Okay, I admit I was a little hasty there. A little. The bandit with the gun agreed mildly. But I ought to thank you. Saves us the trouble of finding you. Finding him for what, the bandit didn't elaborate, and Foggy was glad of it. I live to serve, Foggy replied, dryly, because his mouth had always moved faster than his brain. But before he could experience any negative consequences for it, there was a loud, ominous thud from the direction of the stables. Everyone jumped, Foggy included. They also turned to look. At which point, Foggy figured a bullet in the arm was better than one in the heart, and ducked down to ram his shoulder into the gun-wielding bandit. After that, everything exploded into chaos. The gun went off, but it didn't hit Foggy at all. The bullet went right through the shoulder of one of the men behind him. That guy dropped his sledgehammer with a thump, and Foggy lunged for it, spinning to swing it in an arc around him. He hadn't gotten enough leverage to do much damage with it, but it knocked everyone over, and that was enough. It allowed Foggy to put some distance between him and the bandits, although he had to leave the hammer behind to do it. Almost immediately, a blur of red and black descended on them. It wasn't hard to figure out that this was the mysterious vigilante Brett had told him about. "Get behind the barrels," the Red Devil ordered, his voice low and rasping and sharp. Foggy, unarmed, decided to do as he was told, but he couldn't help peeking out of cover every so often to study his rescuer in action. The devil's boots and gloves and hat were as black as night. His chaps and shirt and bandana were as red as blood. The only part of his face visible was his jaw, and his mouth, stretched in a bloodthirsty smile. It was a decent disguise. But the thing was... Foggy would know Matt anywhere, at the ends of the earth, in any disguise under the sun. Foggy knew Matt down to his bones, down to his soul, and the man in red and black fighting off bandits with nothing but a rusty chain, that was Matt. Foggy's Matt, with his biting wit and agile movements and boundless determination. The Red Devil couldn't be anyone else. It felt cowardly to stay hiding behind the barrels, but Matt seemed to have the fight well in hand. He was everywhere, twisting, kicking, lashing out with the chain, in constant, fluid motion. He didn't stop until the bandits were laid out around him like scattered seeds. And then, after a brief pause and a tilt of his head, Matt began hauling them together and tying them with rope from the barn. Foggy climbed to his feet and moved closer. "Matt," he said as he approached, "when did... how did..." "We'll talk," Matt promised, as he finished hog-tying the bandits. "Later." "Later," Foggy agreed. He'd been away from the saloon longer than intended already, so as Matt disappeared back towards the bunkhouse, probably to change back into his usual clothes, Foggy turned for the center of town. He was halfway there when he noticed dark smoke staining the sky, more than Melvin's blacksmithing forge could ever produce. It could only mean a fire. But what was on fire? The bank? The jail? Had the attack on the ranch been a diversion to free their captured fellows? But when Foggy got close enough to discern the truth, it was worse than anything he'd imagined. The saloon. The saloon was on fire. He should have known, he realized numbly. They'd been looking for him, after all. Where else would he be this time of day? Flames climbed up towards the sky, as orange as the setting sun. The glass of the saloon windows had burst from the heat. Even so far out, Foggy could feel the fire on his skin like he was stood next to a furnace, but his blood ran ice cold in his veins. "Candace!" he shouted, but there was no answer. Nothing but the roar of the flames. The deputies and the bank employees were already running for water. Foggy knew he should follow them, try to save his family's livelihood, but where was Candace? Still inside? Passed out from the smoke? He was supposed to have been in there with her. Pop had trusted him to watch over the saloon and their family, and instead he'd run off to see Matt like a love-struck fool. If Candy was hurt, if she... With that unbearable thought in his head, he barreled towards the doors and was stopped by a strong, heavy hand on his shoulder. "Don't go," cautioned a familiar, deep voice before Foggy had even started struggling. "It's empty. It's empty in there." Foggy hardly dared to hope. "Candace, she got out?" he asked, turning back to look up at the face of Melvin the blacksmith. "Yeah, but Foggy, they took her," Melvin said, his posture tense and guilty, despite his blackened eye and the bloodied tongs in his hand that showed he'd been more than an idle spectator. "And Sam. He tried to, and I tried to, but they took them." Foggy had a feeling he already knew who they were. He asked anyway. "Owlsley's crew?" Melvin nodded miserably. "Shit." A waterline was already forming. With one last sad look, Melvin moved to join it. Foggy knew he should do the same, but... God, Candy, taken, and Sam too. And Matt might not even know yet. As if summoned by that thought, Matt appeared at Foggy's side. "They lit the saloon on fire?" he asked, sounding agonized. Foggy dared to reach out and grab Matt's arm before he could move to join the line to fight the fire. "It's not just that," he warned. "Melvin says they took Candy, and Sam, too." A thin, pained noise punched out of Matt's mouth. "No. Matt. No. Well, Brett's over there. We'll get a posse, and..." Ignoring the hold on his arm, Matt practically dragged Foggy over to the waterline, where they did indeed find Brett in the thick of the smoky chaos. Matt laid out his demand, and Foggy hurriedly offered context. There was a pause as Brett hauled another bucket of water up the line. "Until we make sure this fire is out and can't spread to the rest of town, I can't organize a posse." He looked sick as he said it, like the words were being forced from his mouth. "Foggy, Matt, I'm sorry." Foggy's heart cracked. He didn't know who it hurt more for. Brett, put in this impossible position? Himself and Matt, twisting uselessly for a way to help the people they cared about? Or Candace and Sam, who wouldn't even know their rescue was delayed for the sake of Clinton? This grim line of thought was derailed by Matt, whose response to Brett's apology was to snarl wordlessly and storm away. It had Brett looking even sicker, but there was no way for him to leave the line. He did his duty and kept passing buckets to quell the fire. "It's okay," Foggy promised. "I'll find him." Matt had already disappeared, but Foggy figured he knew where to. He pelted down the streets to the ranch bunkhouse, and when he slammed open the door to Matt's room, he found his intuition proved right. "Where are you going, Matt?" Matt whirled around, already half-dressed in his Red Devil get-up again, as if he truly hadn't heard Foggy coming. Then he bared his teeth. "Where does it look like I'm going?" he snarled. "To get Sam and Candace back." Of course he was. That hadn't been what... Foggy shook his head. "Then I'm going with you." "Going with me?" Matt repeated, disbelief in his voice. "Candace is my sister. Of course I'm going." "This is dangerous." "I know." "Do you?" sneered Matt, strapping a second gun to his hip. "You're the one not waiting for a posse. At least with me along, you'll have some backup." Matt gritted his teeth, but after a couple seconds of seething, he gave a jerky nod of assent. "Fine." They set out on Lightning and Stardust as soon as Matt was back in his devil duds. But as fast as they pushed the horses, it was already evening. The light was fading faster. They weren't to Dry Gorge by the time it winked out completely, leaving only the thin glow of a crescent moon and a glittering blanket of stars. Not enough for Foggy to truly see where he was going, but he wasn't going to be the one to speak up. Candy and Sam were waiting for them. But then Matt pulled Stardust to a halt and said, "We'll camp here." Foggy balked. "What? No, we have to keep going." "We won't get any further tonight," Matt replied, so sensibly that it just riled Foggy up more. "It's dangerous to travel the desert after sundown. Even if the darkness and the predators weren't issues, we'd freeze. Sam and Candace will look after each other, and we'll rescue them tomorrow." He was right. Of course he was right. But leaving them alone, in the hands of men who had no qualms about hurting them? How could Matt be so calm about that? so logical and cold. They need our help now, Foggy found himself saying, knowing his words would start an argument and barreling towards it with abandon. Don't you even care? Matt snarled. Don't I care? Me? I'm not the one who left. I've been here, right here. You think you can ride back into town 6 years later and lecture me on not watching over the people I care about? The words cracked against Foggy's heart like Matt's bullets against the metal pail. The force was startling enough that he couldn't breathe for a moment, let alone speak. Matt held up a hand. Don't. Just let's get camp set up. And so they did, in silence. Only the shuffling of the horses and the distant howl of a coyote broke the still air between them, until the crackle of a warm fire drowned out both. In its orange light, Foggy could make out Matt's face again. He almost wished he couldn't. Matt had slipped his red bandana back down to his throat, and his entire face was visible. The severe lines of light and shadow that fell across Matt's expression only made his clenched jaw more pronounced. Foggy was still trying to figure out a way to break the silence without starting another fight when his empty stomach did the job for him. At the sound of the rumbling, Matt stood and walked over to Stardust to rummage through her saddlebags. The result of his search was beef jerky, which he wordlessly split between them before settling back in front of the fire again. At first, Foggy was too grateful for something to fill his belly to break the quiet with chatter. But as the chill started to set in around the edge of their circle of warmth, he decided he didn't want to go to sleep with whatever this was still between them. He moved closer. Matt. Matt acknowledged the address with a grunt. Why are you really mad? Not that he couldn't be genuinely mad about Foggy leaving, but he hadn't been mad about it 6 years ago. And the jab about not being there to protect his family was made to hurt, but it obviously wasn't what Matt's problem had been when Foggy first returned to Clinton. Matt's expression was still hard, stern, but had taken on a brittle quality, a facade that could shatter at a single touch. Why did you never write? He asked at last. The words were barely a whisper, but they hit Foggy full in the chest like a speeding locomotive. He opened his mouth, then closed it again. It had seemed prudent not to write at the time. Foggy had wanted to wait until he had some good news to report, until he was making some progress, until the pennies in the little tin under his bed had turned into honest dollar bills that he could use to make their future as comfortable as he'd sworn in his grand parting speech. And so he'd put it off and put it off, each time thinking that if he could do a little better, save a bit more, then... So, really, it had been his pride, his foolish, useless pride, which wasn't worth the poorly hidden pain in Matt's eyes. I'm sorry, Foggy said, lifting his hand slowly to cup it against Matt's jaw. Don't apologize, Matt snarled, jerking out of Foggy's hold. Tell me why. There was a tear glittering on his lashes, like a 1-carat diamond, but it refused to fall. Foggy sighed, squeezed his own eyes shut to fortify himself. I didn't want you to know, his voice broke, know how poor a job I was doing fulfilling my promise to you. A bitter laugh burst from Matt's mouth. I never needed all that, Foggy, he insisted. I never did. You think I took a shine to you because you promised me money? All I ever wanted my whole life was you, just you. Oh, Matt, I've been yours, he wanted to say, but the words wouldn't pass his lips. I've been yours from the very first day. This time, when Foggy reached out, Matt didn't pull away. And when Foggy leaned in and pressed their mouths together, Matt didn't push him off. He hauled Foggy closer instead, kissed him back the way Foggy had imagined, longed for. The fear and the guilt, the chilly night around them, it all fell away under the heat of Matt's mouth and the urgency of his hands. Before Foggy quite knew it, they were flat on the ground, hats knocked off, clothes askew, legs tangled together. There was a bite that would surely form a bruise high enough on Foggy's neck that he didn't think his bandana would hide it. Heat sparked under every inch of his skin. But when the desperation to touch again after so long began to fade, everything else started to filter back in. The dangerous road ahead, Candace and Sam trapped with no one but themselves to rely on. "We'll get them back, right?" Foggy asked, letting those fragile words fall against the column of Matt's throat. "Sam and Candy?" "We will," promised Matt. His hand stroked gently through Foggy's hair once, twice. "Get some sleep." All Foggy could do was believe in those words, in Matt. He closed his eyes and slipped into a dreamless sleep. Foggy woke just before dawn. The sun hadn't yet peeked over the horizon line, but it was light enough to see again. Matt was speaking softly to Stardust, petting her speckled nose. "Is it time to go?" Foggy asked. He stood and dusted himself off. "How well can you see?" asked Matt. "Better than I could last night." Accepting that answer, Matt nodded. "Time to go, then." They mounted up and hurried onward to Dry Gorge. Once they reached it, however, a new problem presented itself. Scouts. Two that Foggy could see, and another one that Matt could hear. "That's not many. We could drop all three before they raise an alarm," Matt suggested. "Yeah, but if they wake up before we can get in and out, they'll know we're here." Foggy had never been allowed near Dry Gorge as a kid. He'd seen it on maps before, but never in person. It was an odd thing to be suddenly thinking about in such a dire situation, but it made him remember something else. There might be another way down to the bottom of the canyon. The only map with that path was one Grandpa Nelson had drawn, but Foggy was willing to take a chance on it. They might as well have a look, anyway. Between Foggy's keen eyes and Matt's powerful senses, they managed to find it. Old, overgrown, and a little worn, but still serviceable. Lightning and Stardust carefully picked their way down the cliffside, hidden from view by the twisting rock formations at the center of the gorge. They reached the ground safely, and left the horses behind to creep towards the cave mouth that marked the entrance of the bandits' hideout. Matt led the way inside, and Foggy followed with a hand on his arm. For several minutes, they encountered no one, nothing. But with one final twist of the cave tunnel, it opened up into a large cavern. Scattered along the edges of the walls were crates, supplies of some kind. Near the center was a cluster of people. Four men with owl-patterned bandanas, and then Candy and Sam with their hands bound. The whole scene was lit in the flickering glow of a single lantern. Surprisingly cheap of them, Foggy thought suddenly. Matt poked him in the arm, then made a gesture between himself and the lantern, and a second one between Foggy and Sam and Candace. Foggy squeezed Matt's arm, then moved into position. With a smash, the lantern went out, plunging the cave into darkness. Ignoring the sounds of a fistfight to his right, Foggy grabbed at the air ahead of him and managed to snag Candace and Sam's sleeves. "This way," he muttered to them, while Matt continued fighting, and they began inching towards the cave entrance. Even without Matt guiding the way, it was easy to navigate with his hand on the wall to keep him apprised of twists and turns. Once they were far enough out that Foggy could see again, he untied their wrists. Sam lunged back towards the cave, and Foggy caught him around the middle. "Let me go, I need to help him." "He can handle it." An explosion rocked the cave. It was too far away for Foggy to see anything, back down the twists and turns of the tunnel, but it wasn't hard to guess the cause was dynamite. Sam struggled harder against Foggy's grip. "Foggy," Candace said, her voice tight with fear. "There's more of them coming." Following her gaze, Foggy could see the three scouts hurrying down into the gorge towards them. "You two stay behind me," Foggy said, shifting Sam to his back and hoping the boy wouldn't run off as he let him go to pull out his pistol. Against all odds, Sam stayed, but Foggy didn't have time for more thought about it than that, because he needed to line up his shots before the scouts spotted them. Letting out a long, slow breath, he squeezed the trigger. The closest scout hit the dusty ground, clutching his arm. Not incapacitated, but at least slowed down. Foggy moved on to the next two. One he managed to get in the leg, and the last one he missed entirely. Twice. Having caught on to the attack after his compatriots were shot, the final bandit had begun zigzagging. When Foggy went for a third shot, all he got was an empty click. Oh, that's not good. While Foggy was trying to piece together a backup plan, Sam snatched the gun from his hand and flung it at the uninjured bandit, a direct hit to the head. He dropped like a sack of bricks. Foggy rushed out to incapacitate the one with the wounded arm. Next to him, Sam knocked out the one who'd been shot in the leg. He moved efficiently and without hesitation. Christ. Matt had been teaching Sam more than how to wrangle cattle, apparently. But Foggy didn't have time to brood on it for long. Suddenly, Matt was bursting past them out of the cavern. "Come on," he called over his shoulder as he headed straight for Stardust, leaping up onto her back almost without breaking stride. Sam hopped up behind him while Foggy and Candace ran for Lightning. Candy swung up astride and Foggy followed her, taking the reins. Without even needing to communicate it, Matt and Foggy both steered their horses towards the main path. It was the quickest getaway, and there was no one to bar their way anymore. As Stardust and Lightning picked up speed, Foggy thought to himself that they might actually make their escape without further difficulty. Then, of course, the crack of a bullet split the air. And another, and another. Foggy ducked forward, pressing Candy down against Lightning's neck to make them a smaller target. They were distant sounds, he tried to content himself. Not close enough to hit, anyway. Most of the bandits were still deep in the gorge. But the narrowness of the path meant that Lightning and Stardust couldn't go as quickly as Foggy would have liked. Once they were out of the gorge, they'd have open ground to maneuver. But until then, a bullet whistled past Foggy's ear, and he cursed the blue streak. "They're gaining," he shouted up at Matt. "I know, but I have an idea." Lifting his head enough to see Matt meant he could also see Matt pulling one of his guns from its holster, cocking it, and aiming it at the rock face above. At a very precarious formation above them, to be specific. How had he even known it was there? The sound of the wind whistling through the cracks? No, that wasn't the point. The point was he was planning to bring the whole gorge down on all of them. "Are you crazy?" Foggy shouted at him. Matt's grin gleamed brighter than the sun climbing over the horizon line. "Trust me." As if Foggy could do anything else. He urged Lightning forward, staying right on Matt's trail. Another gunshot flew wide of them, and then there was the sharp close blast of Matt firing. He hit the weak rock face dead on. It creaked, it cracked, and then, with an almighty groan, the very wall of the gorge began to collapse. The rock slide was deafening, and it was closing in on them even faster than the bandits had. "Boss, the path!" Sam shouted, his voice shrill with terror. "It's going!" "Hang on tight, we're going to have to jump." With a snap of the reins, Stardust flew over the lip of the gorge to solid ground. "Foggy!" Candace screamed. "We'll make it," he promised. They didn't have any other choice. The path was gone ahead of them and behind now. A jump was their only option. Foggy snapped the reins. Like his namesake, Lightning flashed through the morning air, and with a jarring thump that sent his hooves skidding a few feet over the bare earth, he landed safely. Behind them, the gorge continued to spill rocks down its side onto the canyon floor below. "See?" Matt said, clearly heaving for breath. "No problem." "I'm going to kill you," Foggy promised wearily. "Let's go before they find a way up." Side by side, they rode back to Clinton at a gallop. Even with the rock slide, no one wanted to risk riding into town with a stampede of angry bandits right behind them. The sun was still climbing in the sky when Foggy saw the first glimmers of town on the horizon. Closer, closer. They were going to make it. A gunshot split the air. It didn't hit him, but the noise made Foggy panic. They'd lost the bandits, hadn't they? How had they caught up so quickly? Had there been a scouting party that missed the gorge's collapse? There was no time to glance back and check. Foggy just urged Lightning faster. He and Stardust thundered towards the buildings in the distance until they'd finally passed the borders into Clinton. When Foggy chanced to look back out into the desert, it was empty. The bandits had scattered and given up the chase. He pulled Lightning to a stop and then had to brush Candy's windblown hair out of his face as she turned to look behind them too. Stardust halted next to them, giving Foggy a chance to check on the others. Sam had taken the reins. When had he done that, and why? But then Foggy's eyes slid over Matt's masked face and found it bone white, pale and clammy. The moment Sam let go of the reins, Matt nearly toppled right off Stardust's back. Foggy leapt off Lightning immediately, and together he and Sam caught Matt and eased him out of the saddle and onto the ground. One of Matt's hands was pressed tightly to his side. The blood hadn't been noticeable against the red and black of Matt's clothes, but Foggy could see it when he looked, seeping even past Matt's death grip over the bullet wound. That last gunshot hadn't missed at all. "Oh God, Matt, I have to get you to the surgeon." "No." Matt's bloodied hand closed tight around Foggy's arm, leaving a wet red handprint behind. "No, not the surgeon. Claire. Take me to Claire." "Claire?" Foggy asked. The seamstress?" Sewing wounds and sewing cloth couldn't be too different, Foggy supposed. But why? "She knows," Sam said suddenly, as they heaved Matt back upright. "About the boss being the Red Devil. She made his disguise, and she fixes him up so the doc won't snitch to the mayor and Fisk." Christ, how deep did all this masked gunslinger nonsense go? But if Claire could help him, to Claire they'd take him. She was closer anyway. "Candy," said Foggy, "take the horses to the stables." "Foggy." "I know, but just go. And then get somewhere safe, with Brett, if you can." She glared at him, but grabbed Lightning and Stardust's reins and took off running. Foggy and Sam tried to keep Matt talking as they all but carried him to Claire's, careful to stay off the main road and sneak along like thieves behind the buildings. They talked about nothing, about ridiculous things. The amount of hay left in the stables, the best method to make jerky. That time Stardust had thrown Matt right into a cactus patch. But as brightly as they tried to talk, as much as they both attempted to keep Matt engaged, he was flagging by the time they reached Claire's back door. A panicked but oddly patterned knock by Sam had Claire slamming the door open to usher them all inside. She looked concerned, but not particularly surprised. "Clear the table, put him there," Claire ordered, her dark eyes sharp and focused. Without an ounce of hesitation, Sam swept the centerpiece and empty tin dishes off Claire's dining table. Foggy eased Matt down atop it on his back. Then he stepped away to give Claire room to work. She peeled away the layers of Matt's devil getup like she'd done it 100 times. The thought turned Foggy green at the gills, especially seeing all the scars the disrobing revealed on Matt's freckled skin. Thin ones, jagged ones, a couple that could only have come from bullets. Red scars and pink ones, and a few pale silver. One that curved in a hook shape over his collarbone, like someone had tried to carve out his heart. And then there was his newest wound, a round hole gored into his side, still bleeding. Claire eased Matt up a few inches and felt along his back. Then she sucked in a breath through her teeth. "Sammy," she said, cold and steady, "get him something to bite down on. There's no exit wound. I'll need to dig the bullet out." Something nagged at Foggy about that. If the wound was in Matt's front, wasn't that the wrong direction? The bandits had only ever been behind them. The thought, as important as it was, got pushed aside over the next hour, which was the most excruciating of Foggy's entire life. Claire cleaned away the excess blood from the wound, splashed some whiskey on it, and then let Matt take a swig from the bottle before Sam fitted a wooden spoon between his teeth. But that was just the warm-up. Then came the forceps, boiled clean. Foggy had to look away as Claire approached Matt's gunshot wound with them. But he could still feel each poke and prod in the way Matt's hand squeezed his, in each muffled noise of pain. Matt's face went even paler than before, though Foggy hadn't thought it was possible. So pale that his lips were nearly purple. It seemed to take centuries before Foggy heard the telltale clink of bullet hitting table. And after all that, Claire still needed to sew up the wound to keep Matt from bleeding out. In the background, Sam was getting everything Claire needed. Foggy knew he should probably be helping too, but he couldn't make himself leave Matt's side, couldn't make himself let go. Couldn't stop thinking about all the times Matt had been hurt and Foggy hadn't been there. And even after all was said and done, after the wound was closed and dressed, after Matt had been moved to a spare cot so he could sleep, and Sam was back at the ranch, and his family was surely waiting for him at home, Foggy stayed. He held Matt's hand through the day and the night, into the next morning. With nothing to do but think and monitor Matt's condition with Claire, that forgotten nagging feeling returned. The bullet had hit Matt through the front, and not the back. It had hit him, and not Sammy sitting behind him. So, whoever shot Matt had done so from the direction of town. And, after some thought, Foggy had a pretty good idea who'd done it. He'd been hanging around the saloon. He'd shown up in Clinton sometime in the last 6 years, just like Owlsley. He never missed. Lester, Bullseye, it had to be him. The one on the inside feeding Owlsley and his gang information. The one who'd shot Matt. But Foggy was going to make sure he didn't get another chance. As the sun broke through Claire's windows, Matt's fingers tightened. Foggy? Here, Foggy choked out. I'm here. Good. A dreamy smile spread across Matt's face, but it didn't last. His brow furrowed and a fearful look crept into his eyes. Horses. I hear a lot of horses, he said suddenly. Foggy heard nothing. He and Claire both strained their ears, but the house was silent. Matt. Claire stepped out on the porch. Oh no. Foggy followed her and saw the dust cloud headed right for them, one kicked up by an entire herd's worth of horses. There has to be at least 30 of them, Claire said. The bandits, Foggy realized, his heart sinking. Someone needs to warn Brett. I'll go. It was agony to tear himself from Matt's side, but what else could he do? He ran full tilt for the sheriff's office. Once he'd wheezed out everything he could, he turned back to Matt. In his wake, Brett and the deputies were scrambling for every gun in the building and all the ammunition they could carry. Foggy managed to burst back through Claire's door before the horses arrived at the edge of town. He could hear them now, waves of thundering hoofbeats. They went on so long that Foggy had a vain, impossible hope that they might simply ride straight through town, but then they stopped. I'll give you one warning, came Brett's voice, loud and firm. Get out of Clinton now, or I start firing. People of Clinton, we're only here for the Red Devil, someone called, ignoring him. If he comes out to us, everyone else can go free. It's Owlsley, Matt said. He came into town. He never comes into town. Claire peered past the curtains, then jerked back away from them again. Shit. What? Foggy asked, and got shushed. He's right, Claire said at last, quiet. Owlsley's here himself. We have to get Matt out the back before they start coming door to door to find him. No, Matt insisted, darkly stubborn even while confined to a cot. I'm not leaving you here, Claire. I'm not leaving anyone behind. A gunshot split the air. It was followed by a cacophony of return shots. Devil! Came Owlsley's next shout. Are you going to hide behind these townfolk like a coward? And like an idiot, Matt lurched to his feet and started dressing. It took him so long that Foggy was sure he'd realize the futility and give up. But Matt powered through until he was the Red Devil once again, bandana over his face and two guns strapped to his hips. Then he stepped towards the door. Foggy barred his way. It was all he could think to do. You can't go, Foggy insisted, and found his vision going misty with unshed tears. You can't fight them, not like this. You'll die. Matt let out a raspy laugh, then cringed at the pain in his side. If I don't, you'll die. They'll kill you, Foggy, you and your whole family, and I won't let that happen. It didn't have to be one or the other, Foggy wanted to shout at him. Brett and the deputies... Can't be everywhere at once, Matt retorted. If I hide, the bandits will scatter through the whole town. But if I come out and fight, Owlsley and his men will focus on me, and they won't have to be." He said it so simply, so matter-of-factly. To Matt, this was the way things were. He was only doing what he felt he had to, no matter the cost to himself. It was noble and stupid and heartbreaking. And there was no way Foggy would be able to convince him not to do it. He stepped aside, hating himself for it. "Promise me you'll come back then," Foggy ordered. Matt cupped Foggy's face with a calloused palm. Then he leaned in and pressed the softest of kisses to Foggy's mouth. "Keep this safe for me until I get back," he replied instead. And then he was passing something small into Foggy's hands. A leather cord holding a familiar little iron ring. Foggy had made it himself 13 years ago out of scraps under Melvin's watchful eye. Etched it with a geometric design Matt would be able to feel. After a few years, it had gotten too small for even Matt's littlest finger. Foggy had always figured Matt discarded it, but now... now here it sat in Foggy's palm, shined like expensive silver. "Matt." But when Foggy tore his eyes away from the ring, Matt was already gone. Foggy tried to stay put as gunshots started to fly, to stay safe. But he hadn't told Matt about Lester being the mole. He'd been too busy blubbering to even think to reveal what he'd figured out. Lester would be able to take Matt totally by surprise if Foggy didn't do something about it. So, Foggy was going to do something about it. "Claire, you need a gun, right?" she asked, one already in her hands and held out to him. "Just don't get shot yourself, okay?" "I'll try my best." The scene outside Claire's door was chaos. Matt and Brett and the deputies were pinned down behind porches and water troughs, firing only once at a time to conserve their bullets, while a hail of gunfire rained down on them from Owlsley's men, who hardly bothered for cover. The old man himself was hiding behind a cart, peeking out every so often to check on things. But he wasn't Foggy's priority. Lester. Where was Lester? And then a glint caught Foggy's eye from a nearby rooftop. He found himself gaping up at the bullseye himself, clambering onto the roof of the bank with a rifle in hand. Shit. Foggy would never get to him in time. He ran anyway, ignoring the battle behind him, and focused only on getting close enough to shoot Lester off that damn roof. He watched as Lester laid down, started lining up his shot. "Oh, no, you don't. Foggy!" It was only whirling around towards Matt's voice that saved him. A bullet whizzed past his chest in a trail of smoke and gunpowder, just grazing the ring Foggy had looped over his head. And then Matt was sprinting past him to tackle. Was that James? When the two men hit the dusty road, Foggy was able to confirm it. That was James. James Wesley, who worked diligently as a clerk in the records office for years. The man was terrifyingly good at logistics and bitingly polite, but unremarkable. What the hell was he doing in this firefight? No, shit, who cared about that? Matt had it in hand. Lester was the threat. Foggy needed to, but it was too late. Lester fired from the roof of the bank. And then one of Owlsley's men dropped like a stone. Noticing Foggy's stare, Lester offered a two-fingered salute before shooting another bandit right through the head. Foggy cringed. But then a familiar groan of pain drew his attention instantly back to Matt. He was flat on his back, weaponless and clutching his injured side. James stood over him with a revolver in hand, his mouth dripping blood. "We'll see," he said, "how well you recover from this." Foggy blasted the gun right out of his hands. He hadn't even thought, barely breathed. His body had simply known he'd never reach them in time. Foggy thought he might have taken a few of James's fingers off, and even as his gorge rose, he decided firmly that he didn't care. Blood poured onto the street, and James collapsed to his knees, screaming. Matt managed enough leverage to knock him out with a kick, and then Foggy was at Matt's side, cradling his face. "Are you okay? Matt, you, your side." "I'll live," Matt promised, wiping blood from his split lip with the back of a gloved hand. The town had gone oddly silent, Foggy realized. The cacophony of gunfire had stopped, but he couldn't bring himself to look away from Matt's face. He stroked a thumb over his cheek, then helped haul Matt to his feet. They turned back towards where the firefight had been and found carnage was probably the politest way to put it. Owsley was pinned under the cart he'd been hiding behind. Bandits littered the street in various stages of life and death. Anyone who still had working legs was making use of them to beat a hasty retreat from the pursuing deputies. The scattered bandit crew was still running when Lester hopped down from his perch on the bank roof. Foggy, carrying most of Matt's weight, just stared at him. Lester cocked his head to the side and stared back. Why did you help us? Foggy asked. Why? Because I like this town, Lester said, passed the toothpick in his mouth. Good saloon. Nice barmaid. Okay, even if he had helped him, that wasn't going to fly. Stay away from my sister. Lester lifted a single brow, mouth curling up at the corners. A brother's love. Now ain't that sweet? Before Foggy could think up a reply, Lester had strolled on past and down the street, paying him no further mind. I really hate that man. He probably saved our lives, Matt pointed out, a teasing smile curving his lips. And you about ended them both running out to fight, complained Foggy. Come on, let's get you. Nelson, Brett barked, striding over to them with an ominous look on his face. He was moving without issue, and there didn't seem to be any blood on him, which was a nice contrast to Matt's current condition. It did, however, mean that Brett was free to focus his ire on Foggy instead of an injury. Foggy put on his most innocent expression. Brett, you're not hurt. That's great. What the hell were you doing out in the middle of all that? Brett demanded. And with him, of all people. Do you have any idea how much of a pain this is going to be to explain to the mayor? And the... Brett's tirade jerked to a stop. Is that James Wesley? Foggy glanced over at the bloody, unconscious heap behind them. Yeah, about that. He did try to shoot us. He was the one working with Owsley, Matt added. Foggy wasn't sure if it was an accidental slip or a purposeful one, but he wasn't using the raspy red devil voice. Brett pinched the bridge of his nose. Then he let out a long, frustrated sigh. Murdoch? Matt's beaming smile was answer enough. I suppose you'll be wanting some kind of pardon. If you please, Sheriff. He did help save the town, Foggy pointed out. Brett scrubbed his hands over his face. What a damn mess. Look at it this way, said Matt, wholly unrepentant. At least we found your mole. Through some machination or other, James was sent to Silver Springs to await trial. Owsley, however, Clinton got to keep. Whether he'd rat out Fisk or not, it was difficult to say, but Clinton's bandit problem seemed to be well and truly over. Won't be much for the Red Devil to do anymore, Foggy mused, leaning against the ranch's fence while Matt fixed up the last of the damage the bandits had left behind. Matt tipped his face up, offered a roguish grin, and said, Oh, I can think of a few things he might be able to occupy his time with. And then he patted Foggy's thigh before standing from his crouch. The flirtation was so brazen that Foggy's face nearly lit on fire. You... He took a weak swipe at Matt's shoulder, and all he got for his trouble was laughed at. But Matt's quiet laughter was the most beautiful sound in the world, and hearing it just wasn't enough. Foggy needed to taste it at its source. Doffing his hat, he tilted his head and pressed their mouths together. Matt broke the kiss too early for Foggy's liking, but the uneasy cast to his expression stopped any complaints cold. What? Foggy asked. Matt took a shaky breath. Coming back for good? It was the question Matt had asked him the day he returned. Foggy understood it for what it was, now, though. Not a demand for his progress, but a plea for his presence. He searched Matt's face, reached out to brush away a stray lock of red hair. Yeah, Foggy answered. I think I'll stay. The end. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this work, please consider leaving a comment on the original work for the author.